couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, Borat subsequent movie film, On the Rocks, Synchronic, Rebecca, and Bad Hair. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Hulu's Books of Blood, a special treat for Halloween. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is a sad piece of news. It was announced on Twitter by Jeff Bridges that he has lymphoma. He's got a form of cancer, and he's going to be starting to go through treatment. So that's always sad to hear, and it's weird for me to see that get announced by the actual person on Twitter. 20, 30 years ago, you announced that sort of thing through a publicist. But with the ability to reach out to that many people, that's the way that some people directly communicate to the public. So our best interests go out to Jeff Bridges. You've had a long career and a great career. We still like seeing you in movies, and we'd like to see you in a bunch more in the future. The next piece of news is the fact that Quibi or Quibi, I it's funny. I've been pronouncing it Quibi this whole time. I know it stands for Quick Bites, but I guess that it's supposed to be Quibi. Like ribeye, which intrigues me because I love ribeye steaks. But Quibi or Quibi is going to be shutting down. They finally came out and said, look, nobody's buying us. We are going to shut the platform down. I believe the last day of streaming their content is December 1st, just over a month from now. And it makes me wonder, do I even bother canceling at this point? Because, you know, should I just, you know, wait to see what happens? Because there are a couple things I do kind of want to watch now. Now I kind of have to binge watch through November all the rest of the content. Like I started watching Reno 911, which I always liked that show. And there's a couple other horror films that I think might be kind of neat to check out on there. There's a lot of crap on there too. But the fact that it shut down, I wouldn't say it caused a huge ripple through the community because I knew a lot of people were dubious of this platform already for no other reason than the fact it never really kind of took off with subscribers. Once the news was announced that it's going to shut its doors completely, a lot of people went back and looked at it and said, well, this makes sense. And when you look at the platform, and I remember thinking about this when I first started covering it this summer, a friend of mine, friend of the show, Ed Douglas, he's the one who turned me on to it. He mentioned it because he was covering it early in its from its launch. And I said, oh, yeah, I'll spring for it for a couple months. I'll check it out. And I liked some of the content. But one of the things, when you do it in those quick bites, you can't do anything very in-depth. Everything's very much on the surface. There's no subtext to trying to basically present a movie in less than 10-minute chunks. So you didn't have any of that. And while you had some really great people working on it, you also had some that weren't great. Like that Catherine Hardwicke-directed movie, the one about the girl who finds out she's an android. There was really no depth to that. And even though they had The Most Dangerous Game, which was an interesting little film, again, there was not much depth to it because it was so hinged on short attention span theater. There also were some things that people don't immediately notice that people were saying from a social media aspect, it was too restricted. People wanted to be able to take pictures and screenshots, develop their own memes based on it. And that helps make something more popular. And I don't think they quite understood that at Quibi. They thought that if you give people a chance to do screenshots, they're going to copy your content. It's like, no, if you look at stuff like Parks and Recreation or The Good Place got a lot of memes, and that helps make people interested in seeing the show. Parks and Rec has tons of memes. You have tons of memes from Walking Dead. The fact that you can make memes on your own and then add a social aspect to watching it, that's what makes the direct to smartphone technology work. And it's almost like you had a, which you actually did. It's almost like you had a bunch of boomers putting together a formula and a platform that's going to be accessed by millennials and younger, like the Zoomer generation, but having no idea how to actually connect to that generation. It's that old meme of Steve Buscemi walking in going, "Hey, what's up, fellow teenagers?" The other thing, even deeper into it, going into the weeds even more with Quibi, is that there were some business things that were suspect on it. I've heard, and I don't know the ins and outs of the union rules and that sort of thing, but they talk about how by making them 10-minute chunks or less, they were able to classify them as short films, and they're able to avoid certain union payments. And basically, it was a way of avoiding the amount of money you'd have to pay and the royalties that would have to be paid for a larger feature that had this much budget behind it. And basically, it was a cost-cutting measure that really didn't impact the user as much as it impacted the poor people trying to make the content. So they don't blame it on the pandemic as much as they could, and I think that that's wise, because I don't think the pandemic caused this to not take off. The fact that there's so many other things like TikTok and iFunny and even YouTube that people can get short attention span content that were already there and pervasive through the marketplace. So, yeah, I mean, I liked certain aspect of Quibi. I liked 50 States of Fright and such, but, you know, I mean, it's not like it's a huge loss. The last piece of news really quickly is Jared Leto's Joker is going to be in the Justice League Snyder Cut, which gives you a reason not to watch it, because his Joker is absolutely awful. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is called Fat Man. It's been around for a couple weeks, this trailer, but I wanted to cover it. It's opening in theaters on November 13th.
United States military would like to procure your services.
This is a one-time deal, gentlemen.
How are you, Mike? Nicole and the kids are well, I hope.
Where are you?
You just lost a big time, Fat Man!
What's the job?
I'd like you to kill Santa Claus.
What's the purpose of your visit?
Hunting. I'm gonna kill some things.
This is, of course, Mel Gibson playing kind of a retired Santa Claus, and then a hitman comes after him. It is the weirdest looking trailer and the coolest looking film ever. It's completely bizarre, but to me, this is going to be as much of a charming Christmas movie as something like Rare Exports was. So I am looking forward to this. I can't wait to have this in the wheelhouse with other darker Christmas selections. The other trailer I want to hit is for Disney's Raya and the Last Dragon, which opens in theaters on March 13th.
My whole life, I trained to become a guardian of the Dragon Gem. But this world has changed. And its people are divided. Now, to restore peace, I must find the Last Dragon. My name is Raya.
This is getting a lot of buzz because Kelly Marie Tran does the voice of the girl in this movie. And she, honestly, the flack she got for The Last Jedi is doing better for her career, because it drew attention to her, and it drew attention to people saying, hey, let's use this actress, even if she's getting lambasted by Star Wars fans out there. It's sort of like Kelly Marie Tran's presence in The Last Jedi is going to do for her career what Bob Guccione publishing the pictorial of Vanessa Williams did for her career. Without, she didn't have to take off her clothes for this one. And this one looks like it's a neat cultural big screen movie animation adaptation. It's tying itself a bit to Moana, and it looks like you're going to kind of come with that same look and flair and scope of the film. So this is just a teaser, and right now I'm intrigued. It looks really good. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Bad Hair and Rebecca. back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. And the first one came out on Netflix earlier this week. It's called Rebecca, and it's a remake of the original Alfred Hitchcock film from 1940. Ben Wheatley directs this remake of Daphne du Maurier's classic novel of a young bride trying to live up to her predecessor.
May I present Mrs. Danvers?
Welcome to Manderley.
Never seen a house like this.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you'd been a lady's maid.
This is all very new to me.
Oh, I'm sure you won't disappoint him, madam, if that's your concern. We did a lot of entertaining when the late Mrs. De Winter was alive.
You can talk to me about her. I have no secrets from you.
All marriages have their secrets.
I'm going to admit, I've never seen the original Rebecca. I know that that puts me at a disadvantage. I know it's a classic film. I know it's Alfred Hitchcock's first American film. His other stuff was done under British studios. I've never read the book either. So I was coming at this kind of blind. And it was interesting to watch it completely clean because there's so much to live up to with the Hitchcock movie. I mean, the Hitchcock movie was Oscar and everything like that. Here's the thing that I found so fascinating, and the review seemed to reflect this, is the movie itself, the entire story is about this woman who gets married to this rich guy, and she struggles to live up to his previous wife who had died. And a lot of people have pointed out that this version of Rebecca fails to live up to its predecessor. So, you know, you're kind of tilting at windmills already. Now, the original movie came out in 1940. You know, it's been 80 years. So I think you can remake a movie like that. You know, this is not like remaking Psycho, which is sort of timeless in its own right. And of course, when Rebecca was made, the first one with Hitchcock, that was only, I think, like 2 years after the book was published. So it was very contemporary at the time. This one actually takes place in the past, but it takes place in the 50s. And, you know, coming out of cold, I have to say, it's a beautiful looking movie. It's that gothic romance thriller. They're in Monte Carlo at the beginning, and that's where they meet because she's a servant to another woman, played by Anne Dowd, who is underutilized in the movie. She's great in it. But the main character, who doesn't actually have a name, played by Lily James, she meets the character of Max, who's played by Armie Hammer, and they meet in Monte Carlo and they get married. And then pretty much the rest of the film takes place at the manor where they live now. And of course, he's rich and it's this massive house. And she's trying to juggle the responsibilities of a lady. And she doesn't know because she's never been in that position. She doesn't know how to run a house from all the way up at that figurehead top position. And of course, she's getting pushed back from Mrs. Danvers, who's played by Kristin Scott Thomas. And Kristin Scott Thomas, along with Anne Dowd, is one of the best things in this movie. She is a great actress and does a great job in this film. And she's just very unpleasant in the movie. And that's how she's supposed to come across. Now, the movie is gorgeous looking. I mean, it's absolutely lavish. It reminds me a little bit of the other gothic stuff that we're seeing showing up on Netflix, like The Haunting of Bly Manor and The Haunting of Hill House, where the cinematography and the look of the house itself and all of the angles that you can do in there, that and I hate to say that becomes a character in a film because it's so cliche, but that becomes the essential backdrop of this. That's what makes it that gothic thriller. Overall, the story, if you don't know the story, a lot of it's romance and a lot of it is intrigue, but there's so much that's stymied by the fact that the characters don't talk to each other about stuff, and that's frustrating. And I know that comes from the source material, but it's frustrating to watch. And the problem that I had with it is, as good as it looks and as well constructed as the movie is, I just don't buy Armie Hammer or Lily James as these two characters. I'm not a big fan of either of them. I think they're both objectively gorgeous people. They're both very, very attractive. But I've always felt that with both James and Hammer, they're more attractive than they are great actors. Now, I know Armie Hammer's got a great agent. He gets him some great roles. But really, he just looks like Armie Hammer and everything. I don't find him that great of an actor. I know, call me by your name, blah. I didn't like that movie anyways. But Lily James, again, she's pretty, but not a whole lot comes beyond her just being pretty. And I think that's where the movie fails. And Ben Wheatley has done some great stuff, but he's really kind of going into costume drama mode here and should stick to his roots, which are more grisly horror and uncomfortable suspense, which he doesn't quite nail. So ultimately, I'm going to have to say that Rebecca kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about bad hair. A young black woman tries to find a name for herself at a hip-hop cable channel in the 90s.
Who does your hair? No one? Me? You want to be one of my girls?
Yes.
You're not tender-headed, are you?
I'll be fine.
Clients swear the stuff is magic.
A moss-haired girl. She sees trees covered in black moss and made herself a wig.
Maybe the hair in the tree was enchanted.
This is directed by Justin Seaman, and he's best known for doing Dear White People. And that was very subversive and very in your face, and it forced the look at a lot of racial issues in America. And I think that's great. I mean, I think it's good what Dear White People have done. He's trying to get his second wind with bad hair. And let's just say that the social issues and the impactful issues he's trying to make don't quite fit with the goofy style of horror that he's created. I mean, there's a lot to be said. It's interesting. Last year, I had an opportunity to travel to LA with Netflix for a presentation about African Americans in cinema. It was centered around Dolomite Is My Name. And of course, Eddie Murphy was there, Don Cheadle. And they also had Nia Long speak. And she had a great bit where she talked about how hard it was to be a black woman in the acting world back in the 90s, because she got her start with Boys in the Hood. And she talked about there was nobody there to do her hair or have appropriate makeup for her, because everything was mainly for white complexions and white hair. And she'd have to bring her own hair tools and products to the sets, even not when she was doing Boys in the Hood, which was a tiny little movie, but when she was doing bigger stuff, she kind of had to do that. And even Eddie Murphy also echoed that, where he's like, there was like one person who did black people's hair well back in the 90s, and everybody knew who that was. And I think this movie brings out the struggle, and particularly the women, African-American women, go through for the makeup and the hair, and particularly the hair. I don't know what a weave is. I've never had a weave. I shave my head, for crying out loud, because it's easier. But apparently, I mean, they have this whole scene where she goes through the weave, and it's horrifying. It's a horror movie in itself, what a woman has to do to get a weave. And that's supposed to be just to get at that baseline. Just to be able to compete with the white women. And that's got some real interesting cultural things to say. But then the movie turns into this weird thing where the hair comes alive. And while there's scenes in there that are gross and chilling, by the time it gets bigger, it just gets absurd. It gets ridiculous. And what should be scary scenes, even if they're not intentionally meant to be, they come across as really goofy and silly and laughable at times. There's a real uneven pace and approach to this movie. There's some neat ideas, but I think they're trying to do like three or four things, and you needed to pick one at least for the central purpose of the film. So, unfortunately, I'm going to also have to say that bad hair kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about On the Rocks and Sin Chronic. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about On the Rocks. Rashida Jones plays a housewife who worries her husband is cheating on her, which sparks her philandering father to investigate.
So Dean's going away a lot, huh? On business trips?
Dad.
Raise your hand if that sounds fishy.
He's not like you. He's a good guy, a great dad.
Maybe he's just not interested in me anymore.
Impossible. A woman's at her most beautiful between the ages of 35 and 39.
Great. So I have many months left.
He should be worshiping the ground you walk on.
And if he's doing something dishonorable, you need to know. I think we should follow him.
What?
This had a limited run for a couple weeks in October. And I actually spoke about this. If you listen to me as I do some call-ins around stations around the country, you may have already heard me review this because it was in theaters, I think 2 weeks ago, like October 9th. Now it is going to be playing on Apple TV Plus. So if you have not had a chance to see it in the theaters and you have Apple TV Plus or you want to get Apple TV Plus, that's the best way to see it. It is Sofia Coppola's latest film. And what's interesting with Sofia Coppola, I blow really hot and cold on her stuff. There's some of her movies that I absolutely detest. I could not stand Marie Antoinette. I could not stand, what was the one, Somewhere with Elle Fanning. And then there's ones that everybody thinks were the greatest films ever, like Lost in Translation, that I was like, yeah, it was okay. It wasn't the best. But this does reunite her with Bill Murray from Lost in Translation. So it's kind of neat that they're working together again. Like I said, when it comes to Sofia Coppola's stuff, there's also stuff that I've absolutely loved. I thought The Bling Ring was genius. I thought that her remake of The Beguiled was also quite good. I really enjoyed that movie. So I was curious about this movie. The one thing you can say about Sofia Coppola's films, they're very subdued. They're very low-key. They often are, I mean, almost to a fault. And that's why some people complain about them so much. But in this one, the key to this is the on-screen chemistry and the relationship between Rashida Jones and Bill Murray, who plays her father. Both of them are good actors on their own right. And Rashida Jones plays a very typical character. She plays basically a version of what she was in The Office or, you know, the character she played in Parks and Rec, where she's just an attractive but very normal person. Bill Murray plays a little bit different than his normal type. He's a little bit of a philanderer. He's a man about town. You know, even though he's her father, she forgives him for all the affairs he had that he continues to have. He seems to know everybody. And he kind of floats in and out of New York whenever he wants. And what ends up happening is it's him trying to convince her to spy on her husband because she's worried that her husband is having an affair. Which is a legitimate thing to worry about because when you look at the evidence and you look at what's going on and what she's telling her dad is her dad's like, eh, that sounds suspicious. But it's not really about her relationship with her husband. I mean, that's a more secondary. It's a relationship with her father. And the two of them have fantastic chemistry. Jones and Murray just click off each other. And it's kind of amazing to watch because they really work well together. And their timing is impeccable. Their reaction to each other. One of the things with Rashida Jones is she's very much a reactive actor. If you've ever watched Parks and Rec, she was usually paired with either the character of Leslie Knope, who was played by Amy Poehler, or the character of Chris Traeger, who was played by Rob Lowe. And both of those characters on Parks and Rec were over-the-top, full-of-energy characters. So Rashida Jones played more of the reactionary friend or girlfriend. And I think that worked well for her. That's sort of her strength, is grounding a duo. And she grounds him, but she also doesn't let him get away with everything. She's not just the straight man. Straight man is very difficult to do. And I remember reading an article where about Abbott and Costello, where Abbott was paid more than Costello, but Abbott was considered more valuable because anybody can be the slapstick guy. It takes a real good actor to be the straight man. And that's what her job is. I mean, but even with Bill Murray going a little bit over the top, he's not the groundskeeper in Caddyshack over the top. You know, he's not his character from Stripes over the top. He's much more the older Bill Murray. And I have to say, this is a charming film. It's a sweet movie. It has a great message for father and daughter relationships that are imperfect and for marriages that might see some tough times. And I have to say, this is one of the more sensitive, go-lucky, fun pieces you're going to see from Sofia Coppola. But it works. I really enjoyed it. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Synchronic. Anthony Mackie and Jamie Dornan star as two medics who discover a new street drug that's causing people to die with metaphysical results.
What's going on with you?
I want to know that there's meaning in the things I do.
you're watching this, I'm probably trying to convince you of something pretty unbelievable, or I'm dead.
I'd do anything to get her back, but this is... I mean, the next dose could kill you.
There are things that are far worse than death.
This one is in theaters exclusively, as I understand, and I've said this before, you would have seen this movie show up in theaters on a normal year, pandemic or not. But usually movies like this, their thunder is stolen from big studio releases, because you don't get the huge blockbusters in October the way you do in June and July, for example. But this would have been in theaters anyways. It's revealed that it's in theaters because there's not much more new stuff out there. Same thing happened with Honest Thief last week, or The War with Grandpa a couple weeks ago. The guys who directed this, Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, they've done a lot of smaller independent stuff. The one I've seen of theirs was Spring, which was an odd take on a vampire story. They're beloved out there by the independent community and by critics. And Synchronic's getting a lot of great reviews. I don't agree with them. For the matter, I was not taken by Spring, which is the only other movie of theirs I've seen. I thought that one, it was a drag to get through. And that's the way I feel about this movie as well. I mean, I love the idea of this street drug that opens up this ability to, and I'm going to just steal a line from Kurt Vonnegut, where you become unstuck in time, where it affects your pineal gland. And so you kind of shift times. And that's a great concept and a really neat idea. And at one point, you know, Anthony Mackie's character has to go help find Jamie Dornan's daughter who gets unstuck in time. And I love the idea. And it's funny, I was blurbing this to somebody on a radio interview earlier this week. My wife was in the room and she said, that sounds like a really interesting movie that I would be into. I'm like, it's not for you, honey. She's like, what do you mean? And I go, well, the idea is cool. This sort of time travel thing in a pragmatic real life situation and this metaphysics element is really cool. And this guy trying to help save his friend's daughter. But the problem I had with this movie is the characters, Dornan's character and Mackie's character, are the most sleazy, slimy, boring, annoying, unpleasant people. I can't get behind them. And it takes like half the movie or more to get to the really cool stuff, that metaphysical stuff, that whatever the synchronic stuff is. The one guy's complaining because, oh, I have a daughter and now I've got a newborn and it's really tough to have that. And they're clearly terrible parents. And it's just, I don't have any interest in them. I think they're all kind of, they're meeting at strip clubs and Anthony Mackie, his character is apparently just banging anything that moves and finds out he has cancer. He's like, oh, I don't know what to do because I have such a pathetically useless life. I just, there's nothing appealing about the characters. Another story is Anthony Mackie's character has cancer and he keeps stealing drugs from the ambulance. And I'm like, great. So that's one less reason to like you. The movie idea, the concept, I get frustrated when there's a movie that has such a great concept and they muck it up with the worst character development in a film. I've always said that if I wouldn't want to have a beer with the characters and hang out with them, I can't watch a movie about them. And these would be the kind of people that if I were in a bar and I saw them, I'd just avoid them because they seem depressing and horrible. And that's why I'm going to have to say that Synchronic kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Borat's subsequent movie film and the home cinema roundup featuring Books of Blood. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish off the movie reviews with Borat's subsequent movie film. I have to say, you know, over the months, it's a struggle because this show's not about politics. If you want politics, you can find it anywhere on the radio. But there have been political movies that come up or things that spark political debate. You know, last week I talked about the trial of the Chicago 7, and I likened that to some of the protests and the legalities of that today. I got a clap back from an audience member who started going off about George Floyd, and I'm like, I didn't mention George Floyd at all in this thing. I just mentioned the protests. And in the past this summer, there have been collisions of politics and movies, you know, stuff like I talked about The Watchmen. I've talked about some political documentaries that show up like All In about, you know, history of voter suppression. But I don't want to talk about politics. I'm not a political guy, not at least on the radio. And I was like, oh, great. Now we can have a week where I don't have to deal with anything political. And then I get to set the screener for Borat. Let's just jump into this. Sacha Baron Cohen returns as the dim-witted journalist from Kazakhstan to travel again to America to bribe the government into liking him.
14 years ago, I released a movie film which brought great shame to Kazakhstan. But now I was instructed to return to Yankee Land to carry out secret mission. I'm here to give my daughter as a gift to someone close to the throne.
I really like this.
Let us present Sandra Jessica Parker Drummond.
The daddy has a lot to learn.
My daddy is the smartest person in the whole flat world.
First of all, I didn't even know they were making this until like a month ago. Now, there was some news this summer where people spotted Sacha Baron Cohen. Of course, the famous incident with Rudy Giuliani, which is played out in the movie itself, and the scene he was at some gun rally in Olympia, where he was singing a song, and they thought it was for his TV show. They didn't realize it was for the Borat sequel. And I was excited to see it because I loved the first movie. I thought Borat, the first, was one of the best movies of the year. And I loved his movie Bruno as well, taking on a very different set of issues. But this one kind of came out of nowhere, and I was super excited to see it, simply because I like the character. I love the subversiveness of Sacha Baron Cohen. I don't like people doing it on an amateur thing. I love the movie Borat. I love the movie Bruno. All the people on YouTube trying to do the same thing, you're terrible. Leave that to the professionals. It's sort of like the Jackass series. I actually thought the Jackass movies were funny. They weren't just a prank. They oftentimes had a certain sort of point to be made. All the people trying to do Jackass videos and prank videos on YouTube, just stop that now. Anyways, in this Borat movie, it's exactly what you'd expect it to be. It's the same sort of thing where he goes, and he has to go in disguise. He's kind of Borat disguised as somebody else because he was getting recognized. But he still goes around America and find some really weird situations. And this time he's got his daughter in tow. She's 15 years old. She's played by a girl who's in her 20s, but the character's 15. And she's just as backwards as he is. And what it does to the average person that he encounters is it oftentimes reveals something unpleasant in the low-level background noise. You know, like some low level of racism that's acceptable. And you never quite know whether the person is silently judging them or just giving into the unpleasant nature of what Borat represents. And it does show a lot of that. I mean, if you took a look at some of the background noise in America, there's some unpleasant stuff. Like when he goes to this rally, he starts mentioning at one point in this song, Nazis, and they have a shot of the audience and some guy throws up a Heil Hitler sign. And that bothers me that in America today, somebody could unironically throw up a Heil Hitler sign. That bothers me. But you do see that low-level anti-Semitism that comes through. And that's part of the reason, as I understand, that's why he made it. Not for the overt political stuff like Trump and Pence, even though there's jokes made about them. But those are very low-hanging fruit. They're kind of, the kind of jokes that they make, anybody could make. It's very, they don't go into detail. They're just real easy hit pieces. He was bothered because Sacha Baron Cohen himself is Jewish. He was bothered by the rise in the anti-Semitism in the States. And I think this is his way of confronting it. And you see that still baked into some people in this country. And that's sad. And that's something that I think needs to be revealed so that people can look at that and fix that in their communities and in their personalities. And it challenges people to say, you know, here's something that is wrong that we should not do. And of course, there's the whole Rudy Giuliani scene, which I'm not going to say much about it. The scene speaks for itself. And what's funny is when I saw the movie, I saw it before the news broke, and I wrote my rep, and I said, does the studio have a comment on this? Can the studio confirm that the famous people in the shots are in fact the people in the shots. Amazon was like, no comment. And then Rudy's out there tweeting about it. I'm like, well, he just confirmed that this seems authentic, that this is him. And we all have heard about it. I'm not going to go through the description of it, but I'll tell you, his thing is saying, oh, I was just tucking in my shirt. And I'm like, look, I've had studio mics on dozens of times before. And while they can be weird and awkward to get off, I have never had to lay down on my bed and put my hand down my pants all the way past the wrist just to tuck in my shirt. So I don't know what was going on. And it's not like this really has any impact. I mean, Rudy's not running for anything. It doesn't directly reflect on anyone who's running, but I think more than anything, it shows when you have power and charisma in politics, what a dangerous slippery slope it can be. And to just be careful what you do and to look out for this kind of stuff. He claims to have noticed very early on that he was being pranked. I'm just letting the scene speak for itself. And the thing is, that scene's not even the most important scene in the movie. There's a lot more there. And there's actually this strange, tender story between Borat and his daughter that is very, at times sentimental and progressive and subversive. So yeah, I think it's worth seeing. I don't know if it's as good or better than the first movie because the first movie was so unique, but this one, honestly, easily the funniest movie of the year. And I loved it. I thought it totally rocked.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Really quickly, want to talk about a selection on Hulu that dropped actually earlier this month, but it's worth talking about because it's Halloween, and that is Books of Blood. In this Hulu anthology, the grisly short stories of Clive Barker are brought together from his earlier works.
All the dead have stories.
There is a place where these horrors are transcribed.
I'm not sure where I'm going. I felt like I was being followed.
We're headed to Ravenmoor. Is it a nice place?
No.
Here,
the dead. They're so much closer than you realize.
I wasn't planning on stopping. I just think I'm really tired.
Come. You're safe here.
I'm not a huge fan of Clive Barker's work. I'm more fascinated by it than actually enjoy reading it. His stuff's a little dense, and his stuff is uncomfortable, and it does make you feel strange when you read it, and it's not the most pleasant experience. And his stuff usually deals with metaphysics and fantasy, and the stuff that's happening in the real world is sort of this veneer, and the real interesting stuff is what happens below the surface. This adaptation of the Books of Blood, I'd say, is about a 50-50. I know they've adapted the Books of Blood before. I know other movies like Rawhead Rex comes from the Books of Blood. I think The Midnight Meat Train, these are actually standalone films, that comes from the Books of Blood. The original Candyman story, which has a different name, that comes from the Books of Blood. I'd say they go about half and half. Some of them dip into the real grisly, unnerving, below the surface nature of Clive Barker. And those, I think, are where you see the greatest success in this. I can't verify how well they are adapted because I've only recognized one or two of them. But there are ones that seem just very surface horror. You know, nothing that's insidious or crawling underneath. And like I said, that's what I'd identify Clive Barker is. Clive Barker is, you know, the world's covered in wallpaper and you got to peel that wallpaper away. And some of the stories are just basic wallpaper. And in that sense, this doesn't have the haunting dread and existential nihilism that you get from Clive Barker. There's a depression of Clive Barker stuff in that there is no good. And this one, you have a little bit of comeuppance in certain parts of this that feel more like a mainstream movie than something Clive Barker would do. But still, I mean, it's an interesting little piece for Halloween. It's worth checking out. It's a decent horror adaptation if you're looking for some more horror stuff to watch. There's tons out there. But this one's out there on Hulu. I'm going to say that Books of Blood kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
And that is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about a cinematic celebration of Halloween. Boo! Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.